Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome back to In the Pink, the podcast with me, Natalie Pinkham. Thank you so much for all your feedback and thoughts on Denise Van Outen. She's brilliant, isn't she? I mean, what a woman. My producer is just nodding his head at me. Oh yeah, she's brilliant. My next guest is equally brilliant. He's been on our screens for over 20 years and something of a comic legend. But behind all the pranks and laughter, there have been some real lows for him. A battle with alcoholism and recovery from a heart attack in his early 30s. The name Peter Dale may not mean that much to you, but when I say Tubes from Soccer AM, well, you all know who I'm talking about. It's my great pleasure to welcome Tubes onto In the Pink. Now, you first came to all of our attention via Soccer AM. I mean, this has got to be well over a decade ago, hasn't it?
It was. Do you know what? I did work experience when I was 16. And
you're now 47.
Yeah, no, 54. No, I'm 37. So it's 21 years. So I started off making teas, coming in every Saturday morning, working for free. And then Lovejoy went, I quite like you, you're all right, you can come back. So I came back the next year, working for free, loved it. Like, I was a massive football fan, well, still am. I was like, oh my God, I'm meeting footballers every week. Like, I'm picking them up from the gatehouse, making them teas. I was like, this is wicked, this is so cool. And then I was like, one day away from going to university, Canterbury Christchurch. I was like, oh, I'm going to be a mess at university. I was like, when I come back, though, I'll come and help soccer around on a Saturday. And I got a call from a woman who used to work here called Pippa. She went, what are you doing tomorrow? I said, I'm going to university. She went, no, you're not. I've had Lovejoy up here, said I have to give you a job. I was like, oh. She went, yeah, but you're not on Soccer AM because there's no spaces. But Tim said, give him a job somewhere so then when there's a space on Soccer AM, he can come across. So I phoned up the university. I was like, all right. They were like, oh, yeah, looking forward to tomorrow, you know, the induction and Freshers Week and all that. I went, I'm not coming. They went, you what? No, well, they weren't happy. Next day, I was a runner in the sports library.
Just like that?
Just like that.
Now, I don't know whether that is a good or a bad life lesson to teach young'uns, because do you have any regrets about not getting a degree? I mean, could you have done the two sort of side by side?
I don't think I'd be where I am now if I went to university.
It's all about seizing opportunities, isn't it?
I think so, because I wouldn't have done any work. I would have partied the whole time and yeah. I was never good at schoolwork. I tried
hard. So why were you going to go at all?
Because I was going to do sport. I was going to study sport, sport science.
Right.
To become a PE teacher, maybe. I don't know. When I was younger, I had no idea what I wanted to do. So
you were sort of doing it because you felt like you should.
Because that's what everyone does, isn't it?
Like, and you like to go piss up.
Well, yeah, basically. Yeah. I thought this would be wicked. So me and my mate were supposed to be going, and I just had to phone my mate up, only two of us. He was like, what? Oh, all right, mate. Sorry, pal, I'm going to Sky Sports tonight.
And actually, this would probably be the first place you'd have applied after getting your degree anyway. So you just fast-tracked the system.
Well, yeah, and I had a way in. I was working on the best football show going. I made a few appearances on the box, which I was absolutely shit scared of, but I did it dressed in a nappy with a can of beer, and bizarrely went on to be an alcoholic. But yeah, that's for later on. But yeah, so it was a no-brainer. There's a job for you here at Sky. You were earning, I don't know, 10 grand a year. I was like, oh, amazing.
Yeah.
So cool.
Rather than come out with a load of debt from uni.
Exactly.
Listen, I'm not trying to discourage anyone from going to uni, because I'm a big fan of that. But yeah. I would agree that you have to really want it, and you have to have an idea about the direction that your life's going to go in.
Yeah, of course.
And actually, if you always wanted this, then why wouldn't you go for it?
But I love football, and I was quite good at football until I sort of found other sort of hobbies to do and then muck it all up. So the second best job in my world is to work in football, if you aren't going to be a professional footballer, to work in football. So then someone says, come and do soccer AM every Saturday. In the week, you'll be in the sports library looking at football footage. Or you can go to Canterbury Christ Church and have a right old session every week and do a bit of work and probably come out with a 2-2 or 2-3, whatever it may be. So I thought, do you know what? I'm coming to Sky. So yeah, I've been here ever since.
And you've kind of grown with the show, haven't you? Your role has got increasingly big. Did that surprise you, how kind of well received you were initially, and then the fact that you kind of took the audience with you on that journey? It's been lovely, actually.
Yeah, it's been great. It's been great, and I'm really thankful to all, it sounds weird, but like the people who watch it, like the fans of the show, whatever, they're always so nice to me. And it's like, believe it or not, I'm quite shy. Still am. But when I was younger, I was so shy. So the thought of being on television was like, you're joking. But then, obviously, Tim was like, oh, you're doing this week. You're coming out with one of the soccer lockers. And I was like, I swear to God, Natalie, I was shaking like that. Aww. Like that. And I was like, trying to do impressions. Can't do impressions. They're just all laughing. Like, ah. And then I was Peter the Test Tube Baby. And I remember it to this day. I got cool. I was in the sports library.
Hang on, is that where Tubes came from?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's a fantastic story.
I never even knew that.
It's a fantastic story. So I got a call from the sports library. We were back in the old building, so the sports library was below Soccer M. Tim was like, oh, hi, Pete. Can you come upstairs? I was like, yeah. And he went, right, that little shit Rocket's gone on holiday. You don't do that in the football season, do you? And I was like, no, you don't. He went, so he can't be Lobster Boy. Because he used to come out as a lobster, lobster, fish, to bring the balls out at the end game. And he went, so how do you fancy being Peter the Test Tube Baby? I was like, sounds a bit weird, Tim.
That's so weird.
Yeah, Peter the Test Tube Baby. He went, yeah, basically, mate, there was a band in the 70s called Peter and the Test Tube Babies. Your name's Peter, so we're going to dress you up as a baby. I went, oh, fantastic. It was November. Freezing. So I was like, when you say dress me up like a baby, like what do you mean? Because I thought, you're not going to get a nappy my size. He went, no, we're going to get the runner to go down to home base, and she's going to buy a rug, big white rug, and you're going to wrap it around you and then put white gaffer tape around like a big nappy. And as he's saying this, I'm looking at him like, are you all right?
And he went, can I go back to uni, please?
Yeah, I was like, yeah, Canterbury Christ Church, still got that space, I'm coming. And he went, yeah, so we're going to put the conga music on. I was like, this is just getting proper weird. I was looking at him like, this is not real. And he went, yeah, and you're going to have a can of beer. I went, when does a baby have a can of beer? He went, yeah, so you're going to come out with the balls, have a can of beer, and then just do what you want. He was like, you up for it? I went, you don't have to if you don't want to. I went, yeah, I'll give it a go. So the next morning, I'm stuck behind the Soccer AM game, wrapped in a bath. No, what's it called? The mat they put on the toilet floor.
Yeah.
Freezing. My nipples are rock hard. I've got a can of beer. I'm like that. Get behind. I should get some Dutch courage.
Yeah.
And then I just hear. Then I've just walked out. And everyone's going, what's going on here? There's a hairy man in a nappy doing the conga. So I just started like, I just pulled the beer out of my head. I was like, yeah, legendary. I was like, yeah. I just cracked it on my head and went, yeah, and just chucked the balls and went off. They were like, oh my God, that's amazing. I was like, my mum was like,
darling, I saw you on the TV today. What were you doing?
And I was like, yeah, Mum. I'm Peter the Test Tube Baby now. She's like, oh, I think you should have gone to university. So that went on for ages. And then I'll be like, going like in Epsom, like on the lash with the lads, and they were like, "You Peter Shastri." And I was like, "This is weird."
Gets more and more surreal.
Yeah. And then Tim goes, "Yeah, Peter Test Tube Baby." I was like, "Yeah." He was like, "It's a bit long, isn't it, Peter Test Tube Baby?" I went, "Yeah, yeah." He went, "Let's just call you Tubes." I went, "All right." That's it. And that's the story.
That, do you know what? Tim has got this amazing mind, hasn't he? I talked to him on this podcast.
Yeah.
And he kind of went into the fact that he'd had some... He's been dealing with depression for a long time, but and he's kind of almost got this alter ego. But there is no doubt in his mind that he comes up with these crazy ideas that just seem to work. And I think, from the outside looking in, what he identified in you was something really special because you were shy, because you are shy. It's really likeable. It's really endearing. You're not there to sort of jazz hand show off to the world.
No,
you're just like, and I think speaking as a fan of the show and a football fan and a fan of yours, I think that's what makes, I think that's what makes people want to watch you, because they feel like they're your mate, like a one-on-one. You think, I could go out for a beer with him, and actually he's just a normal bloke. He's not all singing, all dancing, you know, in a sort of vain, narcissistic sense.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I tell you, darling, and I appreciate your kind words as well, but I think that was the fact that what the sort of basis behind Soccer AM getting so popular.
Yeah.
It was like loads of
blokes. Yeah. Yeah,
who didn't really want to be on TV.
Yeah,
like you had Robbie Knox, like fixtures man, like these, and he's like, everyone's like, he's not comfortable. And then I'd come out as a baby, not comfortable, drinking beer. Fenner's doing, you know, all these people are just normal blokes.
You're just basically Tim's playthings.
Yeah, just like you can be a baby for 3 years. All right, cheers, Tim. So yeah, it was.
But I guess there was a sense in all of us as viewers that. It's like that slight buttock clenching moment, isn't it? That makes it quite compelling to watch.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Because we even say that about Martin Brundle's Gridwalk.
Yeah,
I don't know if you've ever watched
it.
Yes,
I have. Yeah, yeah.
But obviously, he's a brilliant broadcaster. But it's that sense of jeopardy that you don't quite know what's going to happen next
exactly.
that makes you watch more.
Yeah.
And you sit there going, oh, Christ, this is really painful, but I've just got to keep watching.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, especially if someone blows him out, doesn't know who he is, and, you know.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, that didn't work out so well. But that's
he does take it quite well, though. When
he takes
things.
It brilliantly.
He's so good, to be fair. I've seen
that's
it a few times.
I think people would much rather watch that than sort of slick...
A polished presenter speaking,
exactly.
Oh, look who's just turned up here to my right, waiting for you. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I totally agree. I love all that.
Yeah. I suppose, and it makes you more human, doesn't it?
Yeah, I suppose that's why all the when I started being a rapper kicked off as well, because people are like, oh, my God, what's he going to do now? What's he going to chuck on his head? Or what Hollywood A-listers are going to upset? Do you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I suppose that's...
I used to watch that from behind a pillow, because I was like, oh my God, what's he going
to
say?
I used to bloody do it behind a pillow.
Yeah.
I was like, what am I doing now? That was the scariest times I've ever had.
In the Pink is sponsored by Bose, who've been perfecting the art of sound so you can listen in unrivaled quality and comfort. The new Bose Noise Cancelling 700s take it to a whole other level. So you'll always hear what you want in perfect quality, no matter where you are. Also, be heard like never before with their unrivaled 4-microphone system, which isolates your voice whilst cancelling the noise around you. Always stay connected with Bose's first-of-its-kind augmented reality function that will change the way you think about travel, exercise and learning. Never be caught out because they have an excellent 20 hours of battery life. And for all you fashionistas, they come in black and silver so you can fit them around your style. Treat your ears with the new Bose Noise Cancelling 700s, a sound experience like never before. Now, back to our interview.
But were there occasions where it did fall flat and you were like,
yeah.
Oh, fuck, that was painful?
Yeah, I got the rap wrong a few times, forgot my words, loads of times.
Go on, think of one that stands out.
Who was that girl who was in My Name Is Elle? Nadine Nakrastris? But I completely blew it with her. Yeah, because I was trying to be all cool and like asking for a date. I went to do a rap. I can't remember what I said. And it just went wrong. And the whole audience just went, rah.
It wasn't the one where she said, do we get to go for a curry? Was it that one?
No.
There was one.
No.
There was one. Who was that? She went, you're well fit. Will you go for a curry? Or something?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
I think that was Carmen Electra.
What?
Yeah.
God, you've had some massive stars,
haven't you?
Oh,
there's been
you?
Some big ones. There's been some weird ones as well. Like, I remember when... Bruce Willis, I've turned up.
Oh my God.
It's mad, isn't it? But when you must know, you've done all this before. When you go to a junket, you have to sit outside the room, don't you? Waiting like that, like you're going into our sport room. Like, next please, like that. And I'm like, I've seen like 2-3 geezers run out of the room, like sprinting. I'm like, oh my God, someone's seriously ill. I'm like in my fucking George little t-shirt and me rubbish little jeans and my little Converse, everyone's suit and boot, like, oh yeah, go to see Bruce, yeah, I'm like, yeah, whatever. They've sprinted past me, everyone's going, what's up? And they're like, Bruce is hungry. I'm like, what? They were literally doing 100 metres because Bruce Willis said he was hungry. So I was like, right, okay, this is not good. And then they came out and went, yeah, tubes, yeah. About the rap. I went, yeah. They went, what are you going to say? I was like, I've no idea. I said, I'm just trying to think about it now. They went, yeah, we don't know if Bruce would like it. I went, oh. And I'm thinking, in deep down, I'm going, well, that's brilliant. That's why I want him not to like it. So it's all weird. They went, can you rap to an empty chair? And then we bring Bruce in for the question. I went, absolutely not. How's that going to work?
Were you that assertive? I think that's quite brave.
Oh, yeah. I said, no. Yeah. Well, the whole point is to see their reaction to what some tubby fella from Cobham trying to be a rapper, do you know what I mean? I went, that's not going to work, is it? But anyway, he was great. Denzel Washington had me in a headlock going down the Savoy Hotel, which was the weirdest. That was a great one. I walked into the room, and then all these ITV people, BBC, they all like used to sit in the middle talking amongst each other like they were like good mates with the film stars. I used to sit in the corner and play Snake on my Nokia. And I went, are you here to do Denzel? I went, yeah. I've not just turned up at wherever it is, Claridge's, for a laugh, to sit with you lot. I went, he's going to hate you. I went, oh, that's fantastic to know. What are you going to ask him? What's the rap? I was like, I don't know. Like, so.
Did you honestly not know? Did you not work it out until the moment?
Because I used to get there like an hour before.
Yeah.
So I used to sit in the corner just doodling. I was like Denzel. I used to just pick 3 or 4 words at rapped and at random and then just make it up. Or sometimes I thought about it on the way, on the train. So I was like, they were like, you know, he's got a bad reputation, you know. I was like, okay, well, you know. And I took it as, I'm never going to see him again.
Yeah.
Denzel's not going to say to me after, do you want to go for a beer or anything, is he? Let's be honest. So I thought, I don't care if he doesn't like it. So I've gone in and he's all like serious. I'm like, oh, hi, Denzel, nice to meet you. He's like, hey. So I said, you're top man, you are Den. I've been rapping since I was 10. Ooh, rapping's for life, not just for Christmas. Like that. And I've done, and I was like, there's no noise. And I've got my head down like that. And I've just lifted my head up. And he's just, look at that. He's just staring at me. I went, hey, we're right, the ITV lot. He's going to go absolutely flip mode. And then all of a sudden, he was brilliant. I was like, anyway, he was like, shut up. I went, oh. I was like, yeah, I mean, I really like you. He was like, shut up. And I was like, screaming. I was like, yeah, but he's not. I could tell he wasn't being serious. And it just went into this brilliant sort of dialogue of just nonsense. He was like, what would your mum say? I should have. She'd be like, oh, wow, you're sitting next to big Denzel like that. And he was like creasing up. So anyway, he got me in a headlock. He was going, that was, hey, man, get this guy back. And he walked me all down the corridor, past all the ITV lot, who just went, for the sake of the podcast, they all just turned their heads and went, he was like, Tubes, don't fuck with big Tubes. Like, and they were like, it went okay then, did it? It was all right. So there's loads
of that. Actually says a lot about him. He I is think cool. It's always people's reactions that, you know, you learn a lot about that person in that moment.
He was great.
And big respect as a result. Are you surprised at the enduring success of the show? What do you think it's down to? Obviously, aside from your unique talent.
I went back in the day when it first started with Lovejoy. It was amazing.
Mm.
Because you could get away with a lot more back in the day, obviously, rules and TV, so we could do sort of, you know, sort of risky things, language-wise and stuff like that.
Mm.
And it was cult, do you know what I mean?
Mm.
It was brilliant. And then, obviously, Lovejoy left, and took Fenners with him. Fenners was a massive part of that show. He's one funny, funny man. Sheephead, Robbie Knox, they all went to do something different. And I was about to go with them. And do you know what? I was so glad I didn't. Because, unfortunately, the thing they were doing didn't really work. Mm. And because all that talent left, Socrem went downhill. We were still trying to do that stuff, but without them. Mm. And it was crap. And I knew it as well. But again, I was still that young boy who was like, I've got the best job in the world here. Mm.
Did you regret at that point not going with them?
No.
Before you knew that...
Well...
I mean, hindsight's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, true, but Tim needed Fenners, he needed Sheephead, he needed Robbie Knox. Mm. He didn't necessarily need me and Rocket at that time, because we were still, like, the young boys. One was really bad at rapping and the other could dress as a lobster, do you know what I mean? Mm. So we weren't important to his sort of new project. Mm. But he did phone me up a few times and, right, just working on getting you over. But I'd heard that it wasn't going too well. Mm. And I was like...
I wonder why it didn't.
I think it was...
That was Channel B, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think it was too early. I think if they did it 5 years ago, it would be a multi-million pound business.
Yeah.
But I think they tried to do the YouTube thing a bit too soon. And I don't know, but their slogan was new content every day. That's not easy to do. No. Especially when you're working for someone like Tim Lovejoy, who's a perfectionist. So Tim would look at things and go, no, not good enough, not going out. That's why the show was so good.
Mm.
But on the other hand,
that's a lot of
work. If you're trying to do new stuff every day, and there's only a small group of them.
Mm.
So I think it just, I don't know what happened. I don't really speak to him about it. I just knew it wasn't going too well. So,
but you're right, timing's everything, isn't it?
I was lucky again. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I was lucky when I got the work experience through Martin Tyler. I was lucky that Tim said, give him a job for one day before university. I was lucky that I stayed here and all that. But yeah, get back to your original question. It died on its arse a bit, and people were like, you know, I'd go to like Chelsea and that, like, Socrem's not really good anymore, is it? And I'd be like, and deep down thinking, no, you're right, it's utter tosh. Do you know what I mean? I was like, we're trying to be funny. We haven't got the clientele to be as funny as that lot. Let's try and move it into a new direction. But then Fenners came back 3-4 years ago. And we've had to rebuild everyone's perception of the show. And you know what? I think we're doing a good job of it. I think a lot of people now, in fact, I know a lot of people now, like footballers, punters, are now saying, Socrem's good again, isn't it? And that, you know, I'll get a buzz from that, you know what I mean? So you still get the odd people like, bring back Lovejoy, but then Max left, bring back Max. It's like the same people.
Yeah.
But still watch it every week. But the viewing figures will show that we are back. So it's great.
Because, you know, some would say, well, football will always be popular, so this kind of spin-off show would always be popular. But that's not always the case.
No.
And, it's interesting that it's sort of had to trough maybe a bit to then peak again. But do you feel like you've got the dynamic right between all of you now? Obviously,
totally.
Lloyd's left for... does that change things? Does it feel different?
Mm. Well, there's one less person on the sofa.
Yeah.
But... Lloyd's a great guy. Mm. Does it change? I don't think it changes a lot, no.
Mm.
Obviously, we miss him, but I think Fenners and Jimmy are brilliant.
Mm.
And
it maybe gives them a bit more space and time.
I think so.
Over.
I think in an hour and a half show, maybe three people was maybe too much sometimes.
Mm.
But Lloyd was funny. Lloyd would brought all the sort of comedy to it, you know, with his accents and... You know, he's really, really funny. So obviously we miss that, but then we get our guests to do that. So instead of having an actual funny man, you're laughing at the person trying to do it. Like, I've done it the last 3 weeks. I'm useless. I can't read auto cues. So I'm like, blah, 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 blah. Do you know what I mean? So that's funny in a different way.
Mm.
Whereas, I don't think it's changed massively. I think it's brilliant. Do you know what I mean? Jimmy's... I could watch Jimmy all day.
Oh yeah.
I mean, the guy's a lunatic.
Yeah.
But I will say about Jimmy, he's a lovely lunatic. He's a great, great person.
Mm. And that makes a difference. I mean, I think everybody works that much harder when you actually get on with each other, doesn't
it? The team unity now is amazing.
Yeah, that's amazing. Along with Bose, In the Pink is sponsored by Tag Heuer, Swiss avant-garde since 1860. Excellence, precision, and elegance. Their timepieces are designed for those who love challenges, which is a great fit for this podcast because most of the guests share that sentiment. So, do you have half an eye on what next? Like, you've got to sort of always have an exit strategy at the back of your mind, or at least have fingers in other pies, just so that you can. Because, as we know, TV is a fickle thing, and linear television is definitely declining, like the way to consume content, and it has obviously been, as you say, probably the last 5 years, it's been trying to generate more stuff. You've got a YouTube channel. Tell me about that.
It's a YouTube channel. We did call it YouTubes, which was, I thought, a stroke of genius. I was buzzing about it, going, way! But then realised that no one was subscribing to it or watching. And I was like, I've just released a golf video of John Terry and Jimmy Bullard. And everyone, and I just read the comments section going, can't find this on Instagram and Twitter. And what had we done? We're calling it YouTubes, but that's literally one more letter to YouTube. Mm. So you type in YouTubes, they go, do you mean YouTube? Do you know what I mean? So no one could find it. So then one of my YouTube friends, you know, one of the geeks who knows all the analytics and stuff, went, don't call it that, that's really bad. It's a great name.
It is a great name, but you're undermining it.
No one's going to see any of your content, so we just call it Tubes. And it's basically sort of a golf and football channel, but when they're with the golf, it's like a podcast, but on a golf course and visual. So we're playing, it's the four-hole challenge. We play four holes, and we just talk about the career and, you know, the personal life and everything. So we've done John Terry, Sidwell, done Begovic, Matt Fitzpatrick. That was our first golfer we had. He was awesome. Beef's going to do it next week.
He's amazing.
Justin Rose. We've had Charlie Austin. And then off the back of that, we have, like, you, me, and a par three. So we play like a par three, and the loser has to do a forfeit. So I've had Wayne Bridge walking off the green like a dog. I've flossed while John Terry's driving a golf cart. What else have we had?
By the way, I wish that we were filming this podcast, because you're doing little demos as each one, you know.
Oh, there's been loads of stuff. Matt Fitzpatrick hit five golf balls up my arse.
Oh. That really, I wondered if you were going to say arse. You did actually say arse.
That really hurt. Oh, there's loads of it. There's loads of it. And there's football videos as well. There's interviews and stuff like that. So it's going really well.
Important is that to you, you know, to be sort of carving your own niche in a way? Because you have been part of a, you know, a bigger picture for 20-odd years. And it does feel like important for you to, you know, take a bit of control of what you're doing and stamp your own sort of mark on things.
Yeah, I mean, I love interviewing people. So for me to do that, and I can... There's no time restrictions on YouTube. And I was shocked, Natalie. I thought, when I started doing the four-hole challenges, I thought, no one's going to sit there and watch me play golf with a footballer for 45 minutes. They're going to watch the funny little ones, like catching balls in a bucket and stuff like that. But that's the one. They're the ones that have absolutely flown. Really? Like, Bullard's now on over a quarter of a million. Fitzpatrick's already on 130,000. It's like... And they were only 7 months old, the channel. So, yes, it's important. I don't want to leave SoccerM, because SoccerM's still on the up.
Yeah.
And if we carry on, we'll get it back to the best it's ever been. Like, and it's not far now, in my opinion. Others may disagree. But... like you say, you never know. Sky bosses might go, we don't want any more live shows. And then you go, what shall I do then?
But because I think SoccerM has stood the test of time, I'd be really surprised, but as you say,
who knows?
But I do also think that, well, two key things. If footballers are watching, the actual protagonists, if you like, of your show are actually watching it, that's a big tick, isn't it?
Oh,
and the footballers do respond so well to you. You know, goes back to the likeable factor. If they can talk to you in a way that, I don't know, I think some journalists, reporters might just be too clever.
Trying to trip them up, that's more like it. They're trying to get a story.
Yeah.
Whereas I just ask them, like, do you know what I mean? It's not that I go to pubs anymore, but I call it a pub chat. So I don't take notes in. I don't stop. Yeah. We play four holes. Or if I go and do an interview for SoccerM, I make bullet points the day before, or if I'm on the train on the way up, I just memorise those bullet points, chuck the piece of paper away and just go bang.
Yeah.
Probably similar to what you do.
Yeah. I feel it's more natural. I really genuinely don't like it when people take a sheet of notes to an interview, because I don't know, there's a sense of detachment then, isn't there, from your subject, from your interviewee.
I once saw one of the presenters here do it. I'm not going to mention the name. They're not here anymore. After each question, stopped. And I was... The geezer is interviewing was just like, it's not a conversation, and you will not get any good stuff out of them, because they're just going, well, he's just a robot. Mm. You've got to just talk for 15 minutes and cut the best five.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
And you've referenced it a couple of times now, the problems that you did have with alcohol. Where do you think that stemmed from originally? How many years are we going back now? When did you think the problem started?
If I'm being honest, I knew I had a sort of a problem at probably 16.
Really?
Yeah, because I didn't drink like normal people. I drank because I like to get drunk, if that makes sense. And because I was shy, I used to have a few beers. I mean, because I used to go to parties. Around my area, there's three schools. There's like Howard, Thurfield and St Andrews. And I knew a few people from each, but they used to have these massive parties. But I'd be petrified going, because I didn't know half the people. So I'd drink to calm the nerves. And then when I started being a bloody full-sized baby and getting recognised, like going to Chelsea, everyone was like, oh, do you want a beer? Like, you're a legend, mate. And I was like, I'm not really, am I? I just dress in a nappy and do the conga dance. But then I'd be walking into a pub and people would look at me. So I'd be like really nervous. So I'd always be sort of Dutch courage, they call it, innit? So I just have a few beers. But it got a real problem, I think, when my dad died a year after that.
So how old were you then?
It was about 20... I think I was 30 when dad died.
Was it a shock? Was it?
Yeah, it wasn't. No.
What did he die of?
There was post-mortem, we haven't really found out. Basically, it was a mistake. Which is a bit annoying, because my auntie went the same as well. My auntie went in with a bad back, but she was actually pooing through her own bowel. So that got settled out of court. So it was all a lot of... So Dad, I was with Dad the day he died as well, so it was traumatic.
And what, sudden?
We went in. He said, son, pack some overnight clothes. I think I've got to stay in, because his stomach was swollen.
Yeah.
Next thing I knew, he was like going like... fit, if you like, and it just wheeled him away quickly. When I say wheeled him away quickly, loads of the alarms started going off. They took him away and he never came back, do you know what I mean? What? So, madness.
And how old was he?
He was about 60 odd. Not old. That's brutal. He was like my best mate, do you know what I mean? Oh. So I was like, but it took about 6 months to a year.
Mm.
And then I got that post-traumatic stress.
Mm.
And like depression and stuff, and my first thing I did was drink,
and then to sort of lose yourself.
Yeah, just like dampen the pain. But then I got addicted to it. Like I'd wake up in the morning and I'd be like, if I'd been out the night before, that is, I'd buy for the next morning. So I'd have little bottles of vodka stored under the bed, and I was living in Balham. So I moved back to Mum's house to look after Mum, because she was distraught, you know what I mean? So I'd move back. So I was just hiding it from everyone. So I'd have different hiding places for vodka. So when I woke up, I'd be like, bang, bang. I'd be like, oh, I feel right now. So I was constantly drunk until it got to like 4 days. And I was like, I've got to go to work. And then I'd be like depressed again. But when you use that word depressed, I was depressed... properly, because people say that was a hangover. If you're going to drink vodka straight, you're going to feel down. So I don't think that's depression, do you know what I mean? But the reason I did all that is because I didn't know what was going on. Like, I'd be like outside sober, hadn't had a drink inside me for ages, and I'd be like having panic attacks and like bad feelings about Dad and that day and all that. I'd be like, you know, when you just feel sort of like self-worthless, like you just don't want to do, like. So I drank basically and then got addicted to it. And it just got ridiculous. I made the newspapers for being drunk. Got called in here. People going, look. Luckily, they saw me that night. It was one of the boxing nights. So I went to boxing. And Barney at the time, who's the managing director of Sky, was like, I saw you that night, and I was, you were getting like a load of people going, Roger, and you were brilliant, you dealt with it amazing. So I don't know what happened afterwards, but I'm just judging on what I saw. So I got away with that, but I was drunk the next morning. Mm. And I thought, if I leave really early, I can beat all the people. Like, just get home, do you know what I mean? Chill out. But everyone else had the same idea. So I got to Manchester train station. There was like hundreds of people. Hey, drink like that. I was like, oh, Christ.
Were you on your own?
Yeah, yeah. Because I woke up on some random hotel room with loads of other.
Well, you just went back with some fans.
I don't. No, yeah, no. Yeah. It was like work people.
Oh right. Okay.
But I didn't know what I was doing when I was drunk. I never like.
Did you have memory loss the next day as well?
Every weekend.
Yeah, really.
So I was a ticking time bomb. So I got arrested for drunken disorderly. It was a stitch up that I found out that someone took a photo and gave to the Sun newspaper. But then my mum saw that, and then she was like, so like she's getting over dad, and then she's seeing a dickhead of a son in the newspaper. Do you know what I mean? Tube's arrested on the tube. Wee. So that happened twice. And then it was a joke. Like, I'd be living in constant fear. Because I didn't know what I'd done. Like, sometimes I'd be so mad, just because so much vodka, that I'd type in my own note, like.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, not my own name. I type in Tube Soccer AM to the search bar of Twitter to find out where I'd been. I'd be like, well, that's a photo from last night. This is how sad it was. I was like, that looks like it's in Putney. I didn't have a fucking clue where I was. How I managed to function and do a job.
I was going to say, how did you? Like, you came in here and into Sky and performed.
Yeah, it was hard. It was hard. There'd been the amount of times I remember I did an interview with Kelly Brook and Keith Lemon. And I'd been to Reading Festival and I'd been drinking all the way to the interview. I was battered. I think I ripped my top. But then luckily Keith Lemon ripped his top as well. Poor Kelly Brook was just sat there like, she obviously could smell me, you know what I mean? Because it's vodka, like, comes out of everywhere, do you know what I mean? But I got that back to the edit suite, and I didn't know what I did. Everyone's like, Tubes, you're hilarious. And I'm like, I don't remember doing
and
that.
And the problem is, if people are saying it's funny...
Well, that was the point.
You're
that
sort
was,
of...
That was the point, yeah.
Was there any part of you that thought, I almost need the booze to be that funny?
Nah, because I knew I am funnier without booze. Yeah, yeah, I mean... Three or four pints, hilarious.
Yeah.
Everyone would be like,
just take the edge off.
Six pints, boring, because I was just like, well, not six pints, I'm like 15 pints, you know what I mean? Just like, just a knob in the corner, just going, looking for the next drink.
Yeah.
And I'd have my jacket full of, like, vodka.
What, so, like, sneaking booze into places?
Yeah. Oh, no, not even, not to drink it in the pub.
But just so that you always had it.
So I had it when I got the cab home. So then I'd phone a cab driver that I met a few months back. I used to just give him a load of money, just like, not that I had a lot of money. But I'd just be like, yeah, can you take me to just drive around for a bit so I can drink vodka and play some music? It was mad. Like, my life was revolved around drink. So I'd be like, right, so I've got an interview on Wednesday. So I can't drink Tuesday. But it's in Manchester, so it will go well. And everyone, like, the footballer will be like, that's quality that, Tuesday, that's quality that. Straight away, I'd be like, drink. So I go to the train station, buy loads of drink. Smoked at the time as well. So I go and buy, this is how mad I was. So I'd be like, right, so I'm going to need a cigarette. Because I was highly addicted to that as well. So I'd buy deodorant, go into those virgin toilets. You know, when someone starts speaking to you, go, hello, I'm the toilet. Yeah. And I was like,
freaks me out.
It was weird.
Yeah.
So I'd buy deodorant, I'd smoke a cigarette, and I'd be like a fucking idiot. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Then I'd get home and be like, right, straight to the Running Man in Cobham. And then by Thursday morning came, I'd be like gagging for a drink. So I'd be like, I've got to go and edit that piece that yesterday I was so happy about without alcohol. Now I'm like down. Do you know what I mean? Like panicking, like, oh shit. So then what would I do? I'd go to the off license, buy two or three little bottles of vodka, bang, 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 buy a pack of Airwaves, you know, those chewing gums that are proper naughty, like burn, just slap them in my mouth.
And what, hope that people wouldn't notice?
Hope that people wouldn't notice.
And were people noticing?
Not really.
Really? That's a surprise.
A few people would, because I'd sobered myself out, there's a few times I miscalculated it. Then I'd go down to Sign Lane, there's an off licence there. Because, again, the monkey on the shoulder was going, more alcohol, more, so I have to go down. There's a few times I ballsed it right up, and that was not good. But.
And did you ever take drugs as well? Or was it
never drugs. Never touched drugs. Mm. I don't know if I'd be alive if I took drugs, because I'm so addicted to things. So if I took drugs, I'd be like... So, yeah, it was like... So, basically, every weekend, I've moved back to live with Mum to look after her. And she's like... Every time I left the house, she'd be like, oh, God, what's going to happen?
So she knew there was a problem?
Yeah. I think a lot of people did. Mm. I wouldn't admit it. And if you're an alcoholic... The only person who can help you is you to say, I've got a problem. I need to stop.
But was there a catalyst for that?
Yeah.
So what was the moment when you realised you could change?
So I was coming to terms with it, and I kept trying to do it, like, come off it. And so I managed to do like 3 or 4 weeks, but then I'd split up with a girlfriend and be like, oh, fuck, just drink again. So anyway, I got offered to do one of these paid gigs in Manchester. And I still know when people say, oh, do you want to come and do this? And I know that we'll give you a bit of money. I'm like, I'm so lucky. Like, it's amazing. Like, I'm like, this is the best. You know, I'm so, you know.
And there's always a part of you that thinks that might, those offers might dry up. You know, you've got to take them when they're there.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, yeah, I'll do that. It was a right laugh. Mm. It was some building company. And I just had to sort of muck around. And I was like, that comes quite natural to me. I'm happy days. So I went and did that, and then afterwards they went, oh, do you want a beer? I was like, I'm not supposed to be drinking. I went, oh, do you know what, sod it. No one here, I'm not going to upset anyone, like my family or my brother or my mum. So I was like, well, I'm going home tomorrow anyway. So I was like, yeah. So it was a nice hot summer's day. I just earned, you know, I don't know, whatever it was, and I was like, yeah, I'm like, this is really cool, like. Everyone's like, oh, you were brilliant, really funny. I was like, but yeah, I was like, oh, great. So then as soon as the first Cronenberg, like half of it went down, I was like, it just gave me this massive buzz. Like a feeling of like, yes. Like, do you know what I mean? It was like, it's like injecting yourself with something. Like I said, I've never taken drugs, but it was like, oh, wow. Like everything's brilliant. Like, you know, do you know what I mean? So then there's no, I couldn't stop. I could not stop at one. I tried it once and it was like I was proper gagging. Like, people, you know, when people say, you don't go in the pub for one, you know, they make jokes, you can't just go for one or two. I literally couldn't. I've seen my mates do it. Quick in, pint, see your boys home. And I used to look at them, even when I was young, going, how have they done that? Because I couldn't do it. I'd be like, I'd be planning the next one, especially later on down the line. So anyway, pints, went into Manchester. I think I told some of my mates to come up. They jumped on a train, went to Manchester. Did the classic again, woke up the next morning in a hotel room, mini bar, took it all. and they were staying up or something. So, and then that was it. You know when you're like a kid at Christmas and you know that your stocking's there and you're, you know, your Christmas present's done and you get so excited. I was looking, so I had a few of the vodkas from the minibar. Then I walked into Manchester and I saw a pub and it was open. It was like 6:30 in the morning because I was doing my usual scout around trying to get more alcohol, but all the shops were closed. And I saw a pub, a Wetherspoons, and it was open. And I got that feeling, it's like, oh my God, it's like, this is the best thing ever. And how sad's that? Mm. I was like, so I went straight to the pub.
And,
I was like,
you were on your own?
Yeah. Me and my music. I used to love it. That's the actual things I miss about drinking now, is just sitting outside, listening to music, having a few pints, but I can't. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So anyway, I went in this pub, I was like, this is amazing. 7 o'clock in the morning, I'm not allowed to drink. No one's looking at me like, weird. Something like that, a few Cronenbergs. They're like, would you like any breakfast there? I was like, oh, absolutely not. I was like, can I have a shot, though? They were like, yeah. They were like, are you the guy from... I was like, yeah. And then I was like, oh, Christ. So then I moved around to the corner. Just sat there for hours, just drinking. Probably talking nonsense to people on the phone. But anyway, next thing I knew, I was in my mum's spare room at home. I woke up. I was like, I was in Manchester. I was like, and I couldn't work it out. So I was like, oh God. So I walked downstairs, tried to put on the act like I did for years, and went, you alright, mum? She's just like that. Couldn't even look at me. I was like, do you know what you've done today? I just guessed. I went, got the train back, you know, I was a bit tired. She was like, no. She said, I had to drag you all the way down Cobham Station platform. I was like, oh God. And she was in tears. I was like, then the fear came in, I had the shakes. Mum's crying. I was like, this has got to stop. This is absolutely ridiculous. I don't even remember. I lost all my bag. Imagine my poor mum. Middle of the afternoon,
and getting over dragging the me death down. Of your father as well.
You know
this is like
I was
a massive
like, selfish bastard. I was like, I've got to stop this, and I did.
That was it.
And that was it.
So what happened?
Just said, I'll stop. She's like, I've heard it all before. I was like, no, I'll stop. So I went to one AA meeting, and it wasn't for me. And I just figured out, if I don't put that first drink to my mouth, these 5 days that follow won't happen. I started slowly. It was hard because my whole life was like Chelsea, because I got a season ticket at Chelsea. Chelsea's drink day. I sometimes wouldn't even remember the match. So all those little triggers, like Chelsea, after the interview, the buzz came, and then the like drink came. So I was like, no. And then I found the gym. So I was like, right, I need to do something.
Got to get that fix from somewhere.
I need to get a buzz from somewhere. I need the buzz. So... Mm.
And was the gym enough for that?
It had to be, because I couldn't let my mum be like that again.
No.
So I was grumpy. Mm. But then I suddenly... It gets easier. Like I say to a lot of people now that ask me, and like a lot of people direct message me on Instagram saying... Because I'm quite open about it, because I think it helps people, do you know what I mean?
Definitely.
Yeah, so that's why I don't do it to go, I beat alcohol, you know what I mean? Because it's nothing to be like... proud of that you're an alcoholic. But do you know what I mean? I speak out about it so other people who have the same problem, because you know it's peer pressure. In this country, it's what we do in it.
Mm.
Pub, where should we meet? Pub, you know, in different countries, there's in America, you can go to the beach or I don't know, because of the weather, I suppose, but it's the culture here, meet down the pub.
It's definitely harder to say no.
Yeah, and you know, I was just one of those people that just did it. So, a lot of people direct message me like, "Can you help me?" And I try and get their number and phone them, because like, my fingers hurt texting long messages. I mean, so I try and phone as many people as I can to help.
But I mean, just how hard was it? Is it to resist that first drink? I mean, because as you say, it's been part of you. For like
30 years.
Bloody hell. Yeah. Well, started not 30 years. No, so you were about 16 when you were in a problem.
Yeah. So and then you were about about 18 years. I give up 3.5 years ago.
So you've been sober 3.5 years.
Yeah.
Well, you've not even had a sip of alcohol.
No, I can't.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Wow. God, congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
That is incredible.
Yeah, from what I was. So yeah, it's been.
And what about your mum? She must be so proud of you.
No, she doesn't have to worry no more. So she's like, she loves it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's good.
And how have you filled that void? So you've done it. You've done it first and foremost, from what I can gather, for your mum. That was, you know, she's key in that. And then obviously the gym's tried to fill a bit of a void. But you've thrown yourself into work more. What other things have you?
YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Play a lot of golf now. The gym. One thing that annoys me, well, not annoys me looking back, is alcohol ruined, like all my mates now are like 35, like my age, 36, 37. They're all like married with kids.
Mm.
But my love for 10, 15 years, like I was saying, was vodka and Kronenbourg. So I look back now sometimes and go, you know, that's because I had girlfriends, but I was a liability.
And you weren't in the right place properly commit to someone.
And imagine having, like, your girlfriend thinking, I want to have kids with this guy, who can be the nicest person. As soon as he has half a beer, he's gone.
But your personality didn't change. Like, you weren't a bad drunk, were you?
Well, no, but
obviously it's impossible to be around when someone's smashed and it's a continuous thing.
Do you know what I mean? Now, if you're getting up in the morning, the next morning, you wake up next to your girlfriend and you're gagging for a drink.
Mm.
It wasn't the case that I could just go, right, I'll leave that. Mm. I had to get it.
Mm.
So
it's like she's in a relationship with you and the drink.
Yeah.
It's like,
and they'd work it out. They'd be like, where are you going? I'd start off saying, I'm just going to go and make breakfast, like get some eggs or something. I was fucking lying. I was going down, bash, 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 bottles of vodka, and then come back with some eggs. He'd be like, oh, you're not rough this morning. And be like, no, I was still like, I just topped up.
Yeah.
But then.
You didn't give yourself enough time to be hungover.
No. But then she'd be like, oh, do you want to go for a walk? Like, which I'd love doing now.
Yeah.
If I hadn't been out the night before, I'd love to do. But then I'd be thinking, because I'm going to have another craving in a few hours.
Mm.
So I'd be like, but then maybe we stop for lunch at a pub. Do you know what I mean? And then she'd be like, are you drunk? And be like, nah, just a bit tight. And be like, then it'd cause so many arguments.
Mm.
So that's one thing I look back on and go, that is silly.
Do you appreciate different things now? Like you said, you like to walk now. Are there other things that you just hadn't noticed in life that you are able to sort of see the value in now that you don't have booze?
Everyday life.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
lovely. When you don't drink, you realise you have so many more hours. Because, like, if you think about it, you go out, and you get up late, you're hanging, or in my case, looking for the next drink, blanket, like, there'd be weekends I'd be like, what have I done? I wouldn't even know. I'd be like, well, that's a waste.
Yeah.
Now it's like, I'm up at 6 every morning, like, to the gym, playing golf. You know what I mean? I just do so much stuff now.
Yeah.
But you take that for granted, because when you're in that sort of state, it's just ongoing, like, feel depressed. I keep saying depressed. Do you know what I mean? Feel really down.
Yeah, but do you know what? Don't feel bad about saying depressed. You know, because it takes lots of different guises. I think some people almost feel guilty saying that they've got depression, because they go, well, maybe I'm not as depressed as the next person.
No, because I've been through depression.
Yeah.
I had that when the postnatal, not postnatal, the post-traumatic stress, you know what I mean?
Doing well to be postnatal.
So I've had that, so I know what it feels like.
But when it takes different forms.
Yeah,
it?
True. I mean, but when you're applying yourself with straight vodka, lots of, like sometimes 2 or 3 big bottles like that, a day, that gives you, what does it mean? It makes you down, doesn't it? It's a depressant. So that's what I mean by that.
Right.
Because there's so much of people who do suffer from depression without any alcohol. So I was just adding to that with vodka, if you know what I mean.
Mm. So a couple of years later, something crazy happens. You have a heart attack.
Yeah, so
I
was like, how's your luck? How's your bloody luck? Beat alcohol, never been through it in my life, and then I have a heart attack and nearly die.
And you were like,
thanks.
35 at the time?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
It's a couple of,
35, yeah, so I'm 37 now. yeah, I had a big hole in my heart and never knew. And had
so you had an existing condition that you didn't know about?
Yeah, I had a hole in my heart. You know,
was that hereditary? Did you? Was there any history of that?
And plus, we have heart problems in the family.
Oh,
yeah. So, and plus, let's not beat around the bush. My past obviously did not help.
You abused your body.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying it was what was caused it was the hole in the heart.
Mm.
But you know, drinking bottles of vodka straight. It's not good for you.
And what was your diet like when you were drinking? Because I
didn't really eat.
Oh, you didn't eat.
But then on a Sunday night when I was on the come down, whatever. When I say come down, that's not drugs, by the way. The come down of alcohol. I'd eat Chinese pizza.
Crap.
Mm. But then, do you know what? During the week, I could go 5 days without. Do you know what I mean?
What, without booze?
Yeah. So this is the problem. Like, people think an alcoholic is someone who drinks every day. It's not. An alcoholic is someone who can't control their relationship with drink.
Right.
So there's two types. Some people drink every day because they can't control their relationship with booze. Or some people just binge. But I was addicted to it, so that's an alcoholic.
Right.
So I could go 3 or 4 days without.
But then some days you'd wake up and be the first thing you think about.
No, that would only be if I'd drunk the night before. So if it was in my system, I'd have like 5 hours kip.
Right.
Yeah, so it's in the system. So once it's out the system, it was hard to get it out. I could go 3 or 4 days without.
I'm going to come back to your heart attack in a minute.
Yeah.
God, that's not something I'd expect to say.
After the break, we'll talk about your heart attack.
Yeah. Woo! But just to finish on the alcoholism, what advice would you give to somebody that thinks they don't have an out to this, because everybody's different, of course, but I'm conscious of the fact that you tried AA and you said it wasn't for you. You just stopped. Like, that for me shows incredible willpower, and you say that you've got an addictive personality.
Yeah.
But what did you channel in those moments where you had to resist booze? What do you still channel now? Because you know, there'll be a lot of people out there going, I can't do that. Yeah, that's bloody hard.
You can. Because I've done it, and you know,
you have to have a strong enough reason to do it.
The first thing I'd say to someone who thinks they're an alcoholic or suffering with like alcohol dependency is speak. Say to someone, "I've got a problem."
Mm.
Once someone can share that pain with you, if you like, then you feel such a sort of relief that you've said it.
Because you're admitting it to yourself.
I've been doing it for years.
Did you?
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I said to you earlier that I sort of knew, was that 16, 17, that I wasn't normal. I remember a few times like my uncle being in the pub with me at Chelsea, and he'd just look. Because I wouldn't muck around with pints. I'd get it, drink it. Like, they'd be like halfway, and I'd be getting my second. They'd be finishing their first, I'd be on my third. And then just, I remember when I was younger, like they'd go, they'd be like, you get a bit angry, like, what are you doing?
Mm.
I'd be like, what? I thought it was normal.
So, and did you get angry back?
Not really, because like I said, I sort of knew.
You knew.
Yeah. So I denied it for years, but trust me, it does ruin a lot of things, and it's not worth it.
Mm.
So just tell people. Or if you don't want to tell people, go and get help. Because AA meetings might be... There were so many people in these AA meetings, and they were like, it's the best thing. I was speaking to them afterwards, I was like, it's my first one. They were like, I live by it. I haven't had a drink for 10 years, but I come here every day or every 2 days. And for me, I found it all a bit like, I didn't want to, because I'm, like I said, I'm shy. I didn't want to be reading stuff like all these things out of a book.
Mm.
I sat in the back and listened. And it was really helpful, actually, because a man came and he was like, I was a successful businessman. And this is what, what he said was like, that's what I did. Like, blank out, wife left him, had a £2 million house, just drunk. And I could relate to that. Not the £2 million house, because I work at Skype, do you know what I mean? But I could relate, like, it was all going. I'd lost a girlfriend, mum's getting upset, my brother was like, I don't want to go for a pint with him. Friends were like, nah, should we just go for a curry? Like, I see all the similarities he was saying on a bigger scale. So that helped me, but I didn't really like the way it was structured. But that's not to say that someone else wouldn't.
Yeah.
People are different.
Mm.
I also saw a counsellor. But I spent probably a year lying to him. I paid him quite a lot of money per hour, but that was just to keep Mum happy. So he said, what's the problem? I said, I'm a binge drinker. He went, okay. He was like, so what do you drink? And if you go to Chelsea, what do you drink? First lie. I went, 6 pints. He went, okay.
What was the truth?
Oh, about, well, probably 4 little bottles of vodka on the way there.
Right.
4 or 5 before the game. I'd buy some vodkas for half time. Then have 3 pints. Go to the toilet in Matthew Harding, smoke out in the cubicle like a saddo, drinking vodka.
Watch second half like that. Then go out
and then blank out and then do the same thing on Sunday morning, drink again. So, yeah, it was all lies. So then I'd go back the next week. He's like, how did you do? And I went, well, I think I did 8 pints. And he told me at the end, he's like, I knew you were lying. Yeah. But I can't tell my client that he's a liar.
Yeah.
So he's proud of me
and
as well.
And do you
but
worry?
You need to go and whatever's best for you, but speak.
Yeah, yeah.
So whether you speak to your family, your friends, AA meeting, counsellor, you have to speak out.
Mm.
Don't suffer alone.
It's difficult though, isn't it? Really difficult. Do you ever worry about a relapse?
No. There's been a few times that I got really hyped about a good interview or YouTube going really well. Like back in the day, I'd have ruined this already. Like I've got 250,000 views on one video. I'd be like, crash, smash, like, yay. I'd have ruined it by now. But there's a few times the monkey on the shoulder again is going, oh, time for a beer. And I just think of, like, my mum crying, getting dragged along. I can't remember, but I just picture all these things and really quickly that urge is gone.
That's amazing. Yeah.
So that's how I've dealt with it.
Mm. And what about association? Like, do you go back to Chelsea now and watch the game sober and never have that kind of like hankering to go and get some booze?
No.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, honestly, Tubes, that is amazing.
Yeah, but like,
incredible willpower.
Well, yeah, I've done pretty good.
You really have.
Yeah. But like, the first 6 months was hard. I'd started not going for a bit because there's so many triggers there.
Yeah.
So many triggers like there, like the pub downstairs, you know. So, but now I just love it. Drive there.
Do you know what? It's funny because people always say that it's about reassociating those things rather than blank it out and say, I'm just not going to do it.
Mm.
Go, but associate it with something different. And I know that's probably easier said than done, but, you know, something as simple as a song. You know how like a song can come on the... Stick with me on this.
Yeah.
You know how a song can come on the radio and you can remember a traumatic time or an ex 100%. Or something. And you go, oh, just turn the radio off.
Yeah.
Just turn it off. The trick, apparently, is just to keep listening until you reassociate it. I had this after I gave birth. I had real issues after giving birth because it was such a traumatic birth. And I could not talk about the birth. I could not deal with the emotions. I couldn't confront it. And in the end, I went to see someone who said to me, you have to just keep talking about it until it's associated with happy thoughts and until it doesn't become a problem anymore.
See, that's interesting.
But it took a lot.
Yeah,
the anxiety tied up in it. Well, I had a birthing playlist right on my iPhone, and I'd planned this whole. Sorry, I'm digressing slightly.
No,
here.
That's good.
But I had this birthing playlist, and I had all these beautiful songs on it, and it's gonna make me sorry. It makes me emotional thinking about it. But I would listen to the music, and I would be so. Caught up in how difficult the birth was, and I thought I was going to lose my baby, and then I thought I was, you know, potentially going to die. I couldn't listen to any of that music ever again. And any song, there was probably 60 songs on it. Any song from that playlist came on the radio, or came on, I'd just turn it off. And in the end, I've made myself start listening to it and say, I've got this beautiful baby boy. I'm so lucky that. That song is a thing of joy rather than a thing of anxiety. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
So, I don't know. I don't know what the point I was making, it is interesting how your brain
it's
works.
Right, though, isn't it? Because it's different for different people.
Yeah.
Like, for you to do that is incredible, and you've got the willpower and the brain strength to turn that around.
Oh, but it took a long time as well.
But it's like me going to Chelsea.
Yeah.
Like, at first, I was like, no, I'm not listening to those songs, going to Chelsea.
Mm.
But now I'm like, this is amazing.
Mm.
So it does turn out for the best.
Mm.
But you know, I wouldn't go in. I wouldn't go and stand in a pub.
I mean, can you go into pubs now?
I can do, but I find it boring.
Yeah,
like you could get a pint of Cronenberg now and put it straight in front of my face. It wouldn't bother me. What would balls up my whole life is if I had one sip, and I mean one sip. That's why, like, when I get a glass now and it's just water, I'm like, smell it. Because I swear to God, if I drunk it and it was vodka, that would be it.
Wow.
That would be back on it.
Yeah.
So it's, you have to be careful going to pubs because you never know what you know. Is that my sparkling water? Oh, don't know. That's gin and tonic. Come on, let's have it. So that's what it would be like.
Yeah. Blimey. So listen, on the heart attack.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that still blows my mind that you had a heart attack, and thank God, you know, and I know about the story of the sequence of events that you were, your mum had a phone on her when you text her, which is crazy, and you know, the fact that the paramedics were able to react so quickly and everybody had this role in saving you, which is awesome.
Yeah.
What did it do to you longer term in terms of your own mortality and vulnerability and changing you as a person? Did it change you as a person? Has it made you kind of be more grateful? Or what sort of lasting effects do you think?
No, not really. And only because admitting I was an alcoholic and changing my life around, that all happened then.
Mm.
The grateful, like, the change of life, really? Like, I'm glad to be here sort of thing. That was just a complete ball ache, if I'm honest.
But did, just it, like, did it have an impact on really, you psychologically?
Yeah, but little things, like if I'm driving along now and I get indigestion and I burp and it doesn't go, I start panicking. Little things like that.
Really?
But
have you had any sort of surgery to prevent, you know?
Yeah, I've got a stent. I'm on, my heart's working at 55% now, I think it was last time we checked. Yeah, but you look at me like that, but that's good. I can do anything I want.
Wow.
So it's harder
still
to
train and stuff.
Yeah, I train every day now. It's harder to lose weight because some of the pills I'm on slow down the heart and stuff. They do explain
it.
Yeah, I'm on that. I was on 12 a day.
Oh my God.
I could feel myself rattling around every time I walked. I'm like but now I'm down to 4 now. So.
And you feel good?
Yeah, I feel good. I feel good. Sometimes I get a bit tired. But I take that all day.
Yeah.
Could be dead, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, no, sometimes a bit tired, but it's the pills. Like, I came off some pills and they went, actually, your cholesterol's low or something, or your heart. Not life-threatening, but they go, it's not, you've got to get to these levels.
Mm.
And I go back on some more pills and that sort of takes its toll. But on the whole, I'm good. But it was, it wasn't great fun. But I know what you mean by, you know, do you look at life any differently? I would have done massively if I hadn't gone through all the stuff with the alcohol, because that was the true, like, awakening, if you like, of like, wow, life's good. Do you know what I mean?
It feels like you've had a whole life at the age of 37. It feels like
you've been quite a lot, haven't I? Become an alcoholic, had a heart attack. But no.
Award-winning broadcaster. I mean, you probably haven't. Have you won an award? I think you should. Let's create one.
I think I won Zoo's Coolest Man. Yeah. Well, no, I came fifth place. Don't
take
get me wrong. Fifth place, I was like, I'll take that. It's only because Rockets help people to vote for me, but yeah, I'll take that.
Zeus defunct a long time ago, isn't it?
Exactly, but
deeply
sexist
publication.
I've still got the trophy somewhere like that. Yeah, I'm pretty cool.
Oh. Tubes, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for
your company today. And I'd like to say let's go down the pub, but I won't do that to you.
Let's sit
and go and create some award-winning YouTube content.
Yeah.
Hey!
I've got to get you on, actually.
Oh, I'd love
to. Yeah, we do something. It'd be good.
I mean, I'm terrible at golf.
Don't matter,
but
so am I.
My long game's all right, actually.
Yeah.
I properly get a bit of welly behind it. I think it's from playing hockey growing up. But my short game, oh my God, it's atrocious. I've got no patience.
I'm rubbish as well, so we'll do the four-hole challenge, yeah?
Done.
Lovely.
Thank you.
No worries.
Thanks so much. I've always loved Tubes on screen and certainly off it. He sits about 3 rows behind me in the office at Sky, and he genuinely brings a little bit of sunshine into my day and to all our days. He's such a popular, lovely guy, and I really enjoy talking to him. So thank you, Tubes, for your time and your conversation. Let us know what you think. Let us know who else you'd like on In the Pink. We've got plenty more great guests on the way very soon. Thanks for your company. Until next time.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.